The Point Radio.
Hey, it's Mike Robb. Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End comes to Sci-Fi for a special event in just a few days, and we've got a sneak peek with both the cast and the creators. Plus, who doesn't love Earth, Wind, and Fire and Chicago? The guys are on tour all over the U.S., and they're here to talk about how it all got started for each group. Let's get to the point.
This is The Point, The Point Radio, get The Point Radio.
There's no doubt that one of the most beloved science fiction novels of all time is Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End, and it's coming to a special three-night event on the Sci-Fi Channel. Among the stars are Mike Vogel and Yael Stone, and the whole thing is spearheaded by writer and executive producer Matthew Grant. For Mike, it didn't take long for him to figure out exactly how big Clarke's novel was.
Initially, I did not realize the full weight of the project that I was committing to until I was on an airplane headed to Australia. Just because everything happened quite quickly, and as I started, researching the book and researching the history and the sort of the position that Childhood's End held in the eyes and the viewpoints, I think, of the fan base, I went, oh man, wow, this is a big commitment. I read the book while we were filming, and I think, and Matt will speak to it, but I think Matt has done a fantastic job of maintaining the integrity and a lot of the characters and a lot of the main ideas of the book. There's some parts of it have been altered a bit. My character in the book is a 60-year-old is the 60-year-old head of the UN and from Finland. So we went with a 35-year-old Missouri farmer. It's a logical leap. But I think it made him, made Ricky more relatable, more trustworthy as the everyman rather than the politician. That was my experience with the book heading into this.
And for Yael?
I was familiar with Arthur C. Clarke kind of in a periphery way as the guy who kind of predicted the internet and the use of personal computers, and as a visionary and a kind of futurist. I hadn't read the book, and then when the project came up, I then read the book. And, I think it's a really there's a lot of fascinating, big questions. But obviously the book being written when it was kind of comes through from this it's a 1950s framework. It's this very sort of heteronormative viewpoint, and I think Matthew's done a great job in just reimagining the story and this incredible novel while also kind of paying homage to its roots, but also modernizing it.
Matthew came to the project with a lot of passion for the Clarke novel.
It was a book I read when I was 14, and it kind of... It stuck with me mostly because, as a 14-year-old, to be told some aliens won't show themselves because we can't handle it was just, frankly, the coolest thing you've ever read in your life, and you couldn't wait to get through the pages where, to the point where they would reveal themselves, because you couldn't imagine what it would be that would be so awful, so challenging. So that was the kind of the initial thing, and then, of course, the fact that the story plays out the way it does. It's haunting to, especially to a kid who's used to kind of reading stories where things are kind of spoon-fed emotionally to you in a way that makes you feel comfortable. So it kind of was with me for on and off through most of my life as a book that I remembered always fondly and was always excited by. So, and as the others have touched upon, yes, we've done something to update it in some ways and make it more accessible to a broad audience, which I think is essential if you're writing about the future and not knowing what's going to happen to us. You can't set it in the 50s because we all live in the 21st century, and we know that those people in the 50s, there's no point in them worrying about nuclear war. It ain't going to happen, at least for a while. So it had to be updated in order to keep the sense of paranoia and uncertainty that pervades the book. And then, Mike touched on making Ricky a farmer rather than a politician. I think, again, that reflects the age we're in now, where we're a little bit less, we're more distrustful of politicians, and we're certainly more aware of the cynicism that pervades and the problems that pervade global politics. So, I adopted a more kind of Old Testament approach, really. You know, it's a kind of a God speaking to the farm boy rather than God, and making him a king rather than God speaking to the king.
To translate all this visually, of course, CGI plays a big part, which was yet another challenge for some of the actors.
I've never worked with imaginary things in front of me, I have to say. That was a first time for me, and on my first day of set, I was looking at a piece of green gaffer tape and imagining the arrival of a being that represented everything that my whole life was set against, and perhaps the thing responsible for the loss of my mother. And I got to say, it was pretty tough to be working off that green piece of gaffer tape. And I think I wrote on my script the date, and I wrote, "This is the day I have to stop acting because I can't do it and it's impossible." Well, I didn't tell anyone, but that's how I felt.
For Matthew, well, there was a whole other set of challenges.
I think probably the most difficult aspect of it all for me was every single morning seeing what we had to shoot and do in a day. And it never seemed to get smaller. I kept thinking one day we're going to look at a call sheet and it's going to say, "Mike sits under a tree and eats an apple," whistles a tune, and it never did. It just said 5,000 extras, 100 utopians, giant spaceships, huge aliens, and it was such a daunting, you know. It's always a good idea, I think, to never fully know the scale of something. If it's a big project, to never fully understand the scale of it going in, because you just wouldn't do it. And once we got going, you know, as exciting as it was just every day was so daunting. So much to do, and the scale and the ambition of it all.
The story involves a powerful race of aliens who come to Earth and offer mankind the end of all of our woes, with a pretty hefty price attached, though. So for a what-if question, I asked the cast how they'd react to such an offer in real life.
You've just hit on the barroom conversation we had almost every single night in Melbourne. Well, it's Matthew here. It's a really tough one, because there's a bit of me that kind of sides with Cole Meaney on this one. Cole Meaney, the character, Colm's character, Wainwright, in that in some ways you kind of want to be just in charge of your own destiny, for good or for bad. We don't want to be condescended. We don't want to be mothered. We want to do it ourselves. But right now, with everything that I'm looking down the gun barrel of, whether it's ISIL, whether it's the fact that we're going to run out of antibiotics, and we're going back to medieval science, medieval medicine in the next generation, I think I would take the gamble. I think I'd have the Overlord.
The three-night Childhood's End event begins on Sci-Fi on Monday, December 14th. Get complete details right now at sci-fi.com. Good news for DC on TV, all that and more come up as we look at what's going on in pop culture. Sci-Fi is developing a new drama based on Harrow County, the comic done by Cullen Bunn and Tyler Crook. The series launched from Dark Horse in May, and the property was announced soon after as being in development with Universal Cable Productions, even as early as July, as part of a first look deal between the publisher and the production company. The Harrow County graphic novel collection of the first few issues should be in comic stores right now. Smallville's Tom Welling is headed back to television in both a starring and a producer role. It's all for a CIA drama called Section 13 in development from CBS. The series comes from Warner Brothers and Welling's production company, and it's written by Carla Kettner, who also does Bones. It takes a lot to be considered music legends, but there's no one more deserving than the guys from Earth, Wind & Fire and Chicago, with countless hits over the past few decades. I talked to Verdine White from Earth, Wind & Fire about the early days and the first time he heard one of his songs on the radio.
Oh, you know, it's just amazing. You go crazy, and you, Ralph Johnson, we always agree, if you're lucky enough to get one hit song and you love it and you hear it on the radio, we've been fortunate enough to have many. So it's been a really blessing. But the first time was fantastic.
In addition to continuing with Earth, Wind & Fire, Ralph Johnson produces material for a lot of other artists. And I ask him what he looks for when he wants to work with a new act.
Well, and the things that any of us, you know, because we've all done different records with different people, I think you just look to see what's there from that particular artist and just try to bring out the best from that artist.
After decades on tour and on the radio with some great hits, I talked to Lee Locknane from Chicago about how it all began for him.
Well, I was going to school at DePaul University where I met Walt, and actually about a year or two before we went to college, I was sitting in with a band called The Missing Links, which Walt, Danny, and Terry were playing in. When that group broke up, they formed Chicago, and me and Robert were lucky enough to be asked to join.
Beautiful.
That's his history.
So for Chicago's Robert Lamb, who does he listen to? Who are some of the musical influences in his life?
Well, obviously, Earth, Wind & Fire. The first time I heard Earth, Wind & Fire, I mean, I just my jaw dropped. I stopped in my tracks. Actually, Chicago was recording an album up at Caribou Ranch. The first time I heard Earth, Wind & Fire, and it just, you know, it was like, those vocals are amazing. Those horns are exactly right. The rhythm section is doing it great. Who is that bass player? I want to hear more about him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire, for sure. When I was younger, I think the Beatles had a big effect on me. Mm-hmm. And because I'm a piano player, Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino, those were all guys that, you know, informed my desire to be a rock piano player.
The bands are continuing their live tour all around the U.S. well into the new year. I asked Philip Bailey what makes the groups work so well together.
You know, both catalogs are extensive, and everyone knows exactly what they were doing and where they were when they were singing these songs, and there's so much history, and our philosophies are similar in our music and what we would hope our music would do for people to uplift them and make them feel better. So it's just there's a lot of commonalities that make this a real special tour.
Earth, Wind & Fire and Chicago still on tour and coming to a city near you. Get more information right now at livenation.com. That's it for the podcast right now. You know where to find us, of course, on great websites like comicmix.com, trektvnews.com, popcultureupload.com, and, of course, in the iTunes podcast directory. The Pop Culture Upload is heard on great radio stations all over the world. If you're not getting it on yours, find out why and let us know. You can follow us on Twitter under Pop Culture Upload. You can follow us on Facebook under The Point Radio. And you can join us right back here in just a few days.